Hello, and thank you for joining us for part two of The Labyrinth. If you have not, make sure you listen to part one first to get the background for this job. A lot already happened. The link is in the description below. They call me the Ghost. I'm ex-CIA and now a dark operative on the dark web. Today is the story of mystery, lost souls, and a history still playing out in our world today. Take a listen and enjoy. When the Lost Labyrinth of Egypt was confirmed to exist back in 2008, this was a really big deal, but then everything suddenly went silent. It has been said that this labyrinth, now buried underground, is more elaborate than any of the Great Pyramids. So why isn't it excavated? Why hasn't it been explored? Well, some will say there are political reasons behind all of this. Some say it's just a pull for power over the area and the valuables that it holds. But others say, others fully believe, it is for its own protection and that of its people. Some would tell you that the Lost Labyrinth holds the secrets to mankind, not to mention great artwork, statues, tombs, and more. There's also water and mud making its way into this labyrinth, causing an urgency that it be saved, which has not happened yet. But what else is there? Let's just quickly recap, in case it's been a while since you did listen to part one. I have been called on by an Egyptian government official, on behalf of all Egyptians, to conduct a risky rescue. This man, Beniti, has asked me to go into this buried maze temple to rescue the lost souls from Egypt's past, so that they may be released. No longer able to go back to their tombs that were set for them because they have been opened for tourism, raided for their things, and all the spells and powers that allow them to go back and forth from this world and the afterlife are gone. These souls are stuck. With one obvious place to go, a location yet to be excavated, still holding its sacred powers and protections, these lost souls have ended up in the labyrinth, but now they're stuck. If not rescued, the labyrinth will lose all protections when it's finally dug up by man. Eventually, flooded or not, these souls, who are seen as extremely important to the Egyptians even today, will wander aimlessly through the maze with nowhere to go and no purpose. This would be seen as pure torment and a tragedy, and cannot be. I have agreed to take on this job of helping to free these souls. Stopping in Cairo, we make our way to the labyrinth and have made quite a unique entry, keeping things sealed as they are. So we've seen the maze, the rumbling of the labyrinth is now stopped, and we start to go back into the other areas of the labyrinth the way we came. We know that we are going through the right door because we had marked it. However, this place did its job. When we start to head down the passageway that we think led us to the maze, we realize that there's a big red and black painting of a large man on the wall. That was not in the hallway by which we entered. Things had moved. And that is what all the noises and rumblings were that we heard and felt. We start to turn around again, and we hear more of that loud scraping, and the floor starts vibrating again under our feet. It seems to be coming from all around us, so we start moving a little bit faster back towards the maze, going left, then right. But when we turn that last corner, there is no maze in front of us, as it should be, as it had been. We just left from there and haven't even gone anywhere, not really. Ahead of us now, though, is only a wall, and now there's another turn, leading us again to the right. It only took that one mistake of going down the wrong hall, and now the walls are moving. And I have to say that the reaction of the labyrinth gave us all a very strange feeling. You felt like you were being watched. It knew in an instant, right when we realized we had gone the wrong way. The place just knew. So, as we're standing there, looking at our new hallway, we realize something not even Beniti knew. The maze part of this structure is not just in the center of this place. It's all a part of it. The walls, the chambers, there was no order to this place. That means even the maps are no good. We can still try to use them as a slight guide, but we may find that the maps tell us nothing. The amount of rooms is correct, though. We know that for sure, so it didn't get any smaller. That's all been recorded, and all the scans show the same thing. Our goal is to find all of those courts, and we have 9 left. and we have a ways to go. I connect up with Ryder and Harley through my computer watch. They will then get a hold of Beniti. We are seeing things that no one of our time and for centuries have seen. I want Beniti to know and realize that this whole place is the maze. Even if they could take real-time infrared snapshots of this place, they would be doing it constantly, and if they could get it to us, it still would not help us, because it would keep moving. Coming to the realization of what's going on doesn't stop our mission. We keep going. We're walking through passages and by chambers and colonnades. We do find all of the courts, but it took a long time, and because, with a map that's no good, this place was moving constantly because we kept getting hit by traps. It always knew that we had no idea where we were going. It was all trial and error for us. Something that was on our minds, that the four of us could agree on without even speaking, was that getting back to the entrance of this place when we finally do want to leave could be extremely difficult, and we can only hope that it doesn't end up being closed off so that we are stuck there permanently. It really hit home that not only could someone get lost and confused inside the labyrinth, they could become a prisoner. We weren't seeing random skeletons around though, so that was a good sign. At least one could think that. I mean, who knows? Maybe this place could actually clean up after itself as well. Seems to be pretty handy. Finding the courts went pretty good actually, considering what we were dealing with. The hunt for the last court was the worst. Hallways going nowhere, things moving around. But when we only had one left, we were fiercely determined. Along the way, something started to happen. We were getting EMF readings. We're in a certain hallway, and our machines start going off. And I mean, that's not all too strange in itself, because we were hoping for that. But what is strange about it is that we could never get closer to it or further from it. We could never get the reading to rise or fall. And this led us to believe that not only were we onto a body of energy, but that it was following us. It appeared to stay the exact same distance from us, no matter if we moved forward or backward. With not much that we could do about it, we just decided to keep an eye on it and see what might happen. When we finally find the last court, whatever this energy was, seems to have followed us in, because our readings went up. Inside that room, it would have been forced to be closer to us. Nothing had happened in any of the courts until we got to this last one, because now we have something, a watcher, a spirit that's just sort of hanging around. It was just us and our one spirit. And we really look around. I mean, this court was very beautifully done, just like all the others. The floor was marble. A colonnade followed the wall to our right. Statues adorned the wall to our left. And the back wall had a golden statue of a crocodile up on a large marble box. And there was an intricate painting on the ceiling of more crocodiles. It was clear that this court paid a bit of homage to the reptile. We thought it was beautiful, and we thought it was lucky that none of the items in there, the statues or the reptile, were coming after us. Jaeger takes out one of his golden boxes, and he opens it. It's time to put these things to the test. He sets it down on the marble table that the crocodile is on. When you open these little boxes, in the center of them, there's a column. That column is filled with a mix of oils, and there's a wick sticking out of it. By lighting it, the flame, along with these special oils that Beniti put together, is what will draw the spirit in. We didn't get all the information on how exactly Beniti's box works, but he assured us that that is what will happen. It will draw them into the box, and when the flame goes out, we know that we have it, and you immediately close the box. So it's kind of like drawing a moth to light. It will work with one spirit or many. Once it has them all, that flame will go out. And then once a box is closed with a spirit or however many inside, you don't want to have to open it again because they will just simply get out and escape. With this spirit, we would have to open his box again if we end up finding spirits in all of the 12 burial rooms. That spirit would simply be let out, and then we will have to recapture it. So Jaeger gets it all set up, and we know our spirit is moving about within that court because our readings are rising and falling, and then it just goes on a constant rise as the spirit gets closer to the box, which both Scarlett and I are standing by. And this type of smoke-like figure brushes by us, and then the flame went out. So I immediately closed the box. We've never used this method before, but it did work. This appears to be the only spirit to catch in the courts. We never got any other readings in any of the rooms or hallways. So far inside the labyrinth, the biggest problem we have had is it's moving. But we haven't come into any real dangers yet. It's time for us to go to the lower level. The challenge will be to try to find the staircase or ramp that actually makes sense, because so many have gone nowhere, that can also get us down there. We are well into the night at this point. Before we get going on this hunt for the second level, we take a break and we refuel. But soon, we're on our way again. We had to make our way through the ever-changing web inside this thing. There were small buildings, shrines, more chambers, temples, passageways, even some tunnels. This part of the journey was very wearing because we knew we had to get to that lower level. I mean, skipping it was not an option. But every time that place changed on us, it took a little bit out of you, which is what it was meant to do. So there's absolutely no question that this labyrinth is alive and well, if you will, and working fine. Our minds are put at ease when we finally find the staircase that can get us to that lower level. And this staircase is a little different than any of the other ones we've seen. It's very wide. And I get the feeling, just looking at it, that the staircase is one of the things inside this labyrinth that actually does not move. Things might just move around it. The four of us make our way down these large steps. At the bottom, there are two very large gold doors. We open them, and where we land is a round room with this round pool in the center, surrounded by more columns and two statues. Without explanation, the pool still has water in it, crystal clear water. Strange, but it is what it is. The room has hallways, like spider legs, and going out from all directions. And next to each of those six doorways, there are those columns with the bowls, decorated beautifully, just like the ones on the upper level. Like the staircase, this room looks to all of us like it's permanent, like it's not going to move around. Beniti could not be certain, but we're getting the feeling that the major portion of this labyrinth, the maze, is limited to the upper level. I break out my map and we all go down to the floor to check it all out. According to what we find, the tombs are all lining the outside of the labyrinth down on this lower level. The round room in the middle, it's not on the map. Wasn't expected, so we're trying to figure out how each of these hallways get us where we need to go. But in the end, there really isn't a good way to figure that out. We just need to take them one by one. As I'm folding my map up and putting it away, we feel the vibrations again and start to hear some rumbling. The place is shaking. Then we start to hear these high-pitched creaking sounds, different than when the walls were moving upstairs. We hear that in the distance. This is different, and it's close. We turn back to where the circular pool is, and we can see that one of those statues appears to be coming to life. They did tell us about the soldier statues. We all take a stance around this thing, but then the second statue starts to do the same thing. They're changing from stone to a more human-like appearance, and their stone clothing, everything is changing into real things. And I say human-like because one of them has a crocodile head, and the other one, the head of a jackal. So we know this will be interesting. Each one of the statues is holding a long pole that goes all the way down to the floor. As a statue, they hold them out in front of them with their right hands. Those are already real, and the statues are taking them with them, most likely to use on us. Frankie and Jagger step up to deal with these guys. Scarlett and I tuck away our EMF readers, and we're standing by ready to go as backups if need be. Since these statues have sticks, we all break out our iron rods. They're just on belts, much like a policeman would have. This is one advantage we have over them. Probably back in the day, these sticks were a good choice for a weapon, but jump into the future, and now we have iron rods. The jackal gets done with his transformation first, and Frankie's ready to take him on. The jackal swipes his stick through the air and tries to hit Frankie, but Frankie brings up his left forearm to counter the blow. He pushes back on the stick, throwing the jackal's right arm out. Frankie then strikes the jackal with his rod and gets his right upper arm. They get each other a few more times, and then at that point, Mr. Crocodile's done with his transformation. Jagger's on it, and they start the same dance as Frankie and the jackal. They're starting to move about the room now, as one of them would advance and the other retreats. They're going for each other's legs and heads and arms, just hitting over and over again. I mean, Scarlett and I are feeling bad for Frankie and Jagger, but they're holding their own. This goes on for a while, but when Frankie starts to get back up to the wall, he takes a different shot. He thrusts his metal rod right into the jackal's gut. And this seems to stun him. the jackal freezes. Then he bends over as if he's in pain, hands on his knees. While bent over, he looks up at Frankie. And then suddenly, and out of nowhere and completely unexpected, the jackal closes his eyes, turns back to stone, but not as a solid figure. He just crumbles to the floor. Jaeger sees this, and while the crocodile's attention is now on the jackal, he too shoves his metal rod into his opponent's gut. The crocodile goes down the exact same way. Frankie and Jaeger are sweating and a little out of breath, and we all are just shocked. But we have found a weak spot. This is great and much to our advantage. We have no idea how many more of these things we're going to find and how many are going to come after us. After Frankie and Jaeger catch their breath and we all get resituated, it's time for us to move on from that room. We check in with Harley and Ryder, make sure they're up to date, and then we're on our way. There's no way to know where each of these different hallways lead. There are six of them. Because we don't know if things will change on us once we leave that circle room, we actually mark the doorway that we went through again with our sand clay. If things do change, move around, but we can somehow find that door, we will know that we can go through it and at least get back to the circle room. This lower level area is a bit more elaborate than the upper level. There are designs on the marble floors. There are huge pots that have very detailed paintings on them. This place is really beautiful, and I wish I could have kept pictures of it, but they're not mine to keep. We were on this job, but we were also amazed by this place the entire time we were there. The walls, even on the upper level, are very detailed in their paintings, and the paintings tell stories, the paintings on the walls. It's like looking at a very long storyboard and following it as if you're seeing things from the past as they happened, or possibly they were drawing out things they thought would happen in the future. Very beautiful. Going down this hallway, we see different kinds of rooms everywhere on either side of that hallway. Rooms with statues, chairs, chests, containers, things that look like weapons, more pots and painted stories. But those aren't the kind of rooms that we're looking for. As we get closer to the end of this hallway that we're in, we start to hear this whispering. And once that whispering started, the amount of whispering we hear seems to increase with every couple steps that we take. So we're getting closer to it. The readings on Scarlet and my EMF readers are starting to go crazy. When we get to the end of that hallway, we notice that it tees with another one. You know, walking down it, it actually looked like it might dead end until we got right up to it. Remember, we have lights, but this place is not lit up. We can deduce that to walk this hallway would be walking the perimeter, just as the map showed us. That part appears to be true. On the other side of this hallway, then, should be the tombs. And I'm calling them tombs, and they basically are, but they're really rooms within this labyrinth where, supposedly, 12 kings had been laid to rest. We could go left or right. It wouldn't matter. According to the map, these rooms line the border of this place. We, of course, follow the whispers. Our EMF readers are showing signs of some major activity now. We are in the right place, and we will be going room by room, one right after the other. We get to the first room. There are two gold doors, kind of like the ones at the bottom of the stairs, but smaller. We open those doors, and the room itself just reiterates the fact that we are in the right place. Now, inside the room, the whispering sounds are even louder, and they're all around us. We can't understand anything that's being said, but it's a constant. We take a quick scan of the room. The room has multiple chests, big and small, lining the walls, along with items placed in each corner, tools, amulets, jewelry, among other things. There was anything and everything in that room, but everything was very nice. All the items were polished, for example, and it stood the test of time. And everything was neat and orderly. We don't want to touch anything, move anything, or take anything out of these rooms. But you can bet that those chests are full of many riches. In the middle of the room is the sarcophagus. It's decorated and very impressive. Like the doors, most of it is made up of shiny, polished, beaming gold. It's crazy to think that right then we are in the presence, quite closely, of someone who is a very important king. After our very quick look around, we get to what we're there for, and that is to get those spirits into our boxes. Scarlet starts to get hers out. We'll start with one. We have no idea how many there are or how much each box will even hold. There's no definitive number. She's pulling it out of her pack when she's knocked down. And we all see it happened. A spirit got her. While it was swooping down, it revealed itself. It went from being invisible to being in full view. It looked like gray or charcoal smoke, like what we saw before. And it wasn't in human form or anything. It was more like a long oval that was just flying around. It let out a screech, and with its energy, it shoved her down as it went by her. And just when that happens, we start to hear noises echoing down through the hallway. It's more of those high-pitched squeaking sounds, and we know instantly, it's more statues. And they're not waking up to hang out with each other. Jagger and I peek out into the hallway, and there are three large statue guys stomping their way in our direction, and they're getting pretty close. We go back in and shut the gold doors and use my iron rod to hold them closed, we hope, by sliding it through the handles. We get that in, and it was just in time because right then our statue friends get to us and they start banging and pushing on the doors. And at the same time that starts, I am completely knocked over, just like Scarlett was. And now that I felt it for myself, I know exactly what she meant when she said it felt like she got hit by a football player. There was strength behind that hit, for sure. And like the first spirit, it came out of hiding as it swooped down. So now we can see two of these guys, and they're sort of hovering and flying around above us. They're waiting to see what we do next. They're watching us, and no doubt they all are, invisible or not. Scarlett's setting up her box again, and she opens it, and she lights it. And we're very distracted by the banging on the door, and at this point, both Frankie and Jagger are standing by those doors to make sure the rod holds. With Scarlett's box lit now and ready to go, the craziest thing happens. It was full-on chaos. It didn't take long after the flame was lit in Scarlett's box, and the screams and cries started. These souls were all coming into view as well, and there were a lot of them, and they were really letting out these sounds of pain. It sounded like heartbreak and devastation. If you were outside that room and these sounds were all you were hearing, you would think the people inside were being tortured. It was hard to listen to. We felt strongly that it was them letting go of pain, the pain of walking around aimlessly, lost. They are not where they want to be, and they have lost their purpose, just like Beniti said. But by setting up that box and it compelling them, pulling them in basically, must have felt like they now had a purpose, even if they didn't understand it. They were probably thinking, finally, there's something for us to do. We're supposed to go there. So to make sure you have the picture, we have a lot going on, okay? We're dodging ghosts and hits. We're being thrown down randomly. One of my hits flung me into the corner where I slammed into what was there. I mean, small statues, amulets. Frankie and Jagger now have two rods on the golden doors, and they're pushing back themselves because the force on the other side seems to be growing. And then on top of all of that, we are all surrounded by those loud, ear-piercing screams and cries. Like I said, total chaos. The only good thing that starts to happen is these painful to listen to spirits are actually disappearing into Scarlett's box. We notice after a few minutes that the cries and screams are starting to die down. This is a great thing for us. It means that these lost souls are doing exactly what we want them to. When the sounds are down to almost nothing, we know we're almost done in that room, which is great. What is not great is now we have new issues. As we listen to what appears to be the last of these souls in this room disappear into the box, along with their cries and screams, the entire room starts to shake. It feels like the whole building's shaking. This catches us all by surprise. We really didn't need that right now. We've had about as much as we're willing to take in that room. Scarlett and I rush over to the box, which is still doing fine. The rumbles didn't do anything because it's on that sarcophagus. It's not going anywhere. And we watch as the flame goes out right before our eyes. Even though Beniti said that this would happen when either full or complete with its available collection, it was still hard to believe even the second time. You don't put it out, it just goes out. And it did. Scarlett shuts it right away and engages the lock on it. Done. She reseals it into her bag. And now we need to figure out how to get out of that room. It's not really hard to figure out, though, really, because we all know it. We need to be ready for a fight. That's how. We do respect where we are, and we would rather not bring the fight into the room and destroy it and destroy the things that are in it. We have to open those doors and try to rush them out in the other direction. so we all get into position. That being Scarlett and I manning the doors, we will each pull out an iron rod, one for me and one for Scarlett to have. She already gave hers to Frankie since he used his in the door. Frankie and Jagger will rush these guys, and then we'll follow, realizing that we are all probably going to be in this fight. The rumblings of the labyrinth are getting bigger at this point, and just before we open our doors, small pieces of the ceiling start falling down around us. This place is definitely not happy that we are there. When we open the doors, these three guys practically fall into the room, but they're caught by surprise when Frankie and Jagger rush into them. Now in the hallway, the idea is for Frankie and Jagger to try to position who they can so that they are behind them, giving Scarlett and I the opportunity to jab them in the gut with our iron rods, hoping they go down like the other guys did. But none of that happens right away. These statue guys are throwing their sticks around. Frankie and Jagger are doing the same, and Scarlett and I, we're adding when and where we can. There are four of us and three of them, and we're doing pretty good. But then Frankie gets one. He somehow gets a hold of this guy's arms, and he's holding them behind the guy's back. I see it, and I rush over, slamming my rod into his gut. And the good news is, like the others, he bends down like he's hurt. He doesn't look up, though. He just lowers his head instead. It was like he knew he had been defeated. And sure enough, he goes back to stone and crumbles to the ground. That fallen statue had a cat head. Scarlett and I move in on the guy with the bird head, mostly for a distraction, while Frankie and Jagger pull a duo on the one with the Ramses-like head until he goes down. And they get that done, and now Frankie's just at his limit. The place is shaking. We've all been basically surrounded and hunted for a good chunk of time now. He doesn't even take a break. He just marches right over to the guy Scarlett and I are working on. He grabs him, shoves him against the wall, and just sticks him with the rod himself. And I have to tell you this, I don't know why, but sometimes in moments like that, when something like that happens, and it's usually with Frankie, like he's had enough or, you know, usually something like that, some of us, or even all of us, just sort of freeze at his actions for a second because we're so surprised, and then we just bust out laughing. And that's what happened after Frank acted out his I'm all done takedown of that last guy. And that guy actually had a face. He was wearing a helmet. So there we are. We are standing in a now empty hallway, but everything is still shaking, but it did slow down a bit. We still have more to do. Think about it, 12 kings, and we just got to one room. And I could explain to you guys every room, but this really took a long time. And it was just more of the same, although I will say, one room had a tiger statue, and when that tiger came to life, that was a whole different situation. We were in one of the burial rooms. And this room was extremely beautiful. Again, lots of yellows and turquoise. There was a whole set of small golden sculptures and piles of jewels and beads. And what was also in that room, though, was this tiger statue that came to life. It took all four of us dancing around with this tiger, stun guns in hand. We didn't really want to shoot this guy. I was the first one to be successful to get him with my stun gun. But that didn't take him down. Jagger went and had to get him twice more for him to finally drop. Something else that I can tell you that added to our challenge of these burial rooms were two rooms that met in one of the corners of the perimeter. The ceiling had collapsed in that area, but we still had to get to those rooms. And this is where some of our gear comes into play, why it's important what we have on and where. For instance, take our boots. We had very high-end hiking-type boots on. They're extremely sturdy, grippy, really great tread. They also have metal spikes that we can pop them out if we need them. And then our clothing. I mean, climbing through that rough-edged rock, we were slipping and falling, we were moving things around, and we all actually made it out of there, suits intact. And again, I don't know what that material is exactly, but when they came up with it for us, they did a really good job because we came out of all of that, I mean, rock piles, unharmed. When we finally get to that last area, that's where we see more damage. There's more fallen stone broken off from the structure of this place, and there's water. This tells us that we must be beneath the entrance area and the level above. That's where most of the flooding was up there. So we're picturing ourselves on the map, and we're right underneath the entrance. That's what it feels like to us. This water is about up to our knees. It doesn't disrupt our mission all the way, but it definitely made things harder. fighting off things coming to life, the spirits trying to throw us down, we still had to go through the same exercise, no matter what condition that room was in. When we got to the very last room, there were no spirit readings at all. If you remember, we were going to plan on bringing out Jagger's box again, releasing that one spirit, but then re-catching them all. But surprisingly, there was nothing. It was kind of nice, actually, after everything that we had been through. And at the end of the day, everything worked out. We're standing in that last room, and we just take a look around. We felt kind of bad that there was damage to this place at all. When people go in to renovate something, that's what keeps it good and can stop this kind of damage from happening, from continuing to happen, which is a good thing. Beniti will have some choices to make. Save the structure and what's in it, or full on respect what is sacred and leave it be to do what it does naturally. I can't tell you guys how beautiful this place was. On one hand, it would feel like a loss now that I've seen it if it's not shared with the world. But on the other hand, it's not really the world's choice to make. As they say, is anything sacred anymore? So, okay, by the time we're done, all of our boxes have been used. Beniti really did know his stuff. He was spot on with all of it. They worked great. Like the other secrets the Egyptians seemed to be keeping, Beniti did not want to give up the secret of that box. So I might have to work on him a little bit for that one. We have what we came for. The labyrinth never stopped rumbling, and it was because of us, but we got through it. But it's also causing more damage, so we don't want to stick around. And really, we just don't want to stick around anyway. One point we did learn, though, is that the bottom level does not move at all, but the upper level does. We need to make our way back to the upper level, and we're hoping for the best, that this labyrinth even lets us out. We learned a lot about the layout of the lower level, seeing how we went around the full perimeter, so we have no troubles getting back to that circle room, and we have no problems getting up the stairs from the circle room. But once we're up there, that was a little bit of a different story. Things had shifted so much while we were in the lower level. We're not even exactly sure where that puts us. The hallways and doorways mean nothing to us now. None of it's the same. We sit back and try to think of where our last room was on the lower level, where that water was. We're going to try to go off of that. If we head back in that direction, we hope that it will get us where we need to be, which would be the entrance. Good plan if we don't get completely turned around. The area at the top of the stairs used to be kind of open, but now it's very small. The walls had moved so much, everything was different. Thank goodness the floor wasn't moving, or we might have even been sealed up in the lower level for good. Okay, so we're standing there. We have three doorways to choose from into different passageways. Still having a sense of direction from that water down in the last room, we know that we have to go to the right. But looking to the right doesn't look good. And it looks like the labyrinth knows that that's the way that we should go, and so it's sabotaging us. That passageway is extremely thin. It does not look like the best idea to go into it at all. So we think about it for a minute, not too long. Going to that same passageway looks like a trap. That's all there is to it. So unfortunately for us, we're going to have to take a different route. And we choose to throw the labyrinth off, and we go a completely opposite direction. We go left. Not that we have the best luck there either. We're turning left, we're turning right, we're turning left, we're turning right, we're going down a ramp, up a staircase, and there are no rooms on either side of us. We're just in this hallway that keeps changing direction. We feel like mice running around a maze. But then, just when we think we're running around in circles, we end up back at the center part of the maze, where we were more in the beginning with the tall walls and the dried wood. We have to give it to the labyrinth, though. It had us running around in so many different directions. Surely it was intentional, because now we have lost all sense of direction again. But then I remember we marked our door. If that doorway didn't somehow move, it could be there. Remember how I told you the center maze reaches out in places, touching walls? And what that does is it does not allow you to walk the perimeter. You can't walk all the way around it because you will eventually hit a wall. We checked the area that we're currently in, but the door we marked isn't there. Taking a huge risk because we could get trapped in this maze, we need to check the other sections. Jagger uses the dead vines to crawl up and over one of the maze walls, but he doesn't find our marked door. He's still safe, and he's able to climb back over to our side. I go over the next section, and I find our door. Luck was on our side with that. But it wasn't on our side for long, because right then the maze, all the walls with the dried vines, starts moving. I am now no longer safe, and neither is the team, because they need to get themselves over that wall fast so that we can all get out through that marked door together. The team stays focused. They move fast, but not too fast. They don't want to be scrambling and making mistakes, and they make it over the wall. We don't stick around. We go right out that door, and we're out of there. But now, just because we found our marked door, it doesn't mean that what's on the other side is what we would expect, because most likely it will not be. But what it does do is that spot, that point, gives us a small sense of direction back. Those doors don't seem to move, so we know coming from what direction what got us there and what direction now we need to return. So we're going to try to go in that general direction to reach our entrance. Before we really dive into that final hike out of this place, we stop and we fuel up again. We had a break on the lower level between the burial rooms, and we need to fuel up again now so that we don't lose steam. We're almost there. But the labyrinth didn't make it easy, at least at first. It stayed true to its tricks and deceptions. The hardest part of getting back to the beginning was being routed through this tunnel. If we didn't bring our small oxygen tanks, we wouldn't have made it through this tunnel because it was too long for someone to hold their breath. And how we ended up there, I mean, we were just going down our hallways, and then the labyrinth took us down this small ramp, not a very big one. So at this point, we're sort of in between floors, and the only way to keep going in the direction we want to was to go through this tunnel, this break in what would be the floor, and a break that had filled up with water. So we did what we had to. We threw on our oxygen tanks, we had our goggles, and we have underwater headlamps, but really that's it as far as what can help us through this. We each have two oxygen tanks, you know, the small ones, and if this labyrinth makes this tunnel extra long, we may need the second one, and hopefully we don't need more than that. In this tunnel, we're swimming through it, I guess you'd say, and there are rocks sticking up, there are things sticking down. You know, it's not like this nice little tube that we can just swim our way through. We're stalled, we have to go around things, so it wasn't meant to be easy. But after we got out of that tunnel, we were actually feeling kind of good, because it was starting to feel like we were being challenged and we were passing tests that the labyrinth was throwing at us. And I'm happy to say, it seemed the labyrinth felt the same way. After we got through that water tunnel, nothing else moved. Nothing else happens. All of it stopped. All we had to do is find our way through the maze, find the right passageways and hallways to get us back to our entrance. And then finally, and I mean finally, because we have been at this, this is our second day now, we get to the Hall of Pillars. We slow down at that point, and we look over every pillar we pass on the way back to our entrance that we dug, and we take it all in. We will never be here again, most likely. And we don't know if anyone will ever see what we saw in person. It's a bittersweet moment, but it is time to go. I give Harley and Ryder the heads up that we will be coming through soon. About to leave, the crocodile spirits returned, but they were peaceful again. Overall, it's our opinion that those crocodiles knew better. They did not see us as invaders. I mean, it's their job to protect what's inside, and somehow they must have known that we meant no harm. We look back at them one more time before we head through our dugout opening, and they get into this line, and they're all looking at us, and they don't disappear. They're sending us off. And for some reason, that really meant something to us. Then it was time to really leave. So we get through our tunnel, we refill it as soon as we're through. We can't let any of the energy and good things seep out of this labyrinth. We get that done, and I give Harley and Ryder another notice that the Beniti guys can now remove that stone covering our exit and get us out of there. With everything filled up and closed up, that took a while, Beniti's guys and the team and I, we head back to Beniti's estate. He is more than anxious to meet with us, but he's kind enough to let us get all cleaned up. And in the meantime, he lays out quite the spread for us. So we're back at the table where it all started, where once again, we're chowing down and we're all in need of rest. We give him the rundown, the details. We explain to him how the entire upper level is the maze, not just the center, and how the entire labyrinth is meant to confuse you, and how It made good on all the legends and tales of doing just that. We told him about the spirits and the statues that came to life. We told him about the damage that was there and what happened while we were there. And while I'm telling our story on Being on the Inside, I'm sharing the pictures that I took. And I ended up taking more than I thought I would. And all these great pictures, they now belong to Beniti. He saw the great Hall of Pillars that welcomes you when you enter. And I did take a couple when the crocodile were there, but they didn't show up in the pictures. He saw the giant maze in the center. He has a picture of each burial room and court, and so on. Our boxes are all lined up on the table as we dine and discuss. Our question to Beniti is, what happens next with them? He tells us the spirits will be set free. That was the whole point of this. To do this, it will take a very private ceremony. However, he assures us that it will happen, and he will let us know when it has been done. He explains how this will help put Egypt back into the balance of things. The people of those tombs, the spirits that found their way to the labyrinth, were good people, and they contributed to Egypt's past as well as its future. The spirits will be free to go home, back where they belong in the spirit world, in the afterlife. And these spirits now know that they have no personal tombs to return to. They know a trip back would be futile. They can live free in their new world, and their energy can live on now instead of being trapped and hidden. We don't discuss what will happen with the labyrinth next. That would be pointless. They're holding it close for their own reasons. It's not for us to know or judge or question. As it inevitably happens with all the jobs we do, our part of this is done, and it's time for us to go. We do stay the night, though, so we can catch up on sleep because we know that we have a lot of travel that we're not looking forward to ahead of us. We came out of this experience with a couple different things. It really gave us a sense of how people lived so long ago, how things meant something to them, and how they cared for their people even after they'd passed. You felt a great respect for it all. And the job was yet another reminder that even though we see things on the internet and we can hear things on the news, for instance, there is much more that we do not know. Just because we live on this planet and seem to have access to everything, that isn't actually the case. And sometimes things are better left alone. Maybe some things aren't actually for everyone. Sometimes when too much is shared, mistakes are made. And that was the job going to Egypt and saving the lost souls. We left that job feeling satisfied. Not only were we able to help with something that meant so much to others today, we helped so many that had come before us. It felt good to know that they would no longer be wandering aimlessly without purpose. I really hope you enjoyed the story. As always, stay involved in what you can. Do what you can. Always explore and expand your mind and keep dreaming. Thank you for listening, and until next time, and I will talk to you all soon.